Michigan ranks third in the nation in apple production, so it makes sense that folks are going to be making cider in Michigan. And in this here episode, we're going to be looking at three specific cideries, and it's all about spotlighting the terroir of what is known as Top of the Mitten. Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. We'll be getting to that featured presentation on Michigan terroir in just a little bit, and one thing you should know about it, it's actually a presentation, a sensory presentation that was pre-recorded at CiderCon 2022. And CiderCon is an annual trade conference put on by the American Cider Association. And I was lucky enough to be able to attend this tasting session with folks from an area known as Top of the Mitten in Michigan. So just think for a minute, geography-wise, where Michigan is, it's kind of like in the middle of the U.S., and it has a shape like a mitten. Like a mitten that you would wear during the winter. And so Top of the Mitten is the northern section of Michigan. So we'll be heading there shortly, but first, a wee bit of news from out and about in Ciderville. Coming up in the next couple months, I'm going to be recording a session with a technician at Fermentis, all on yeast and fermentation. And this means that you, dear Ciderville, have an opportunity to get involved. You could send questions, those kind of questions that really have been like nagging and left unanswered or something you've been just wondering about. Any question. I mean, it doesn't have to be super nerdy. It could just be a baseline question about yeast. What is it? How do you explain that to people? I mean, I, Rhea, have my own explanation on that, but wouldn't it be cool to hear a technician explain what is yeast and how do you explain it to folks coming to your cider bar? I think it would. I always like to hear new definitions. And the folks there at Fermentis, they're cool people. I mean, they are helping keep this podcast on the air. So that says something about them right there. And they also have select cider yeast cultures just for you, depending upon what you want your finished product to be. So you could check it all out at Fermentis by going to fermentis.com. And while you're looking at their yeast selections, you could also send a little email my way to info@ciderchat.com with your question about yeast. So I'll be able to ask the cool people at Fermentis and help you and I get our fermentation right.
Strange apples.
Mr. Quince, can you give us a little bit of a drum roll for this next segment?
Roger that.
After 2 long years, I could finally say we are going on a cider tour.
Bravo!
And we're headed to France.
Oui, oui.
The Talking Palms and I may be practicing French, but you don't need to speak French to be on this tour because we have a full-time translator throughout the entire trip. Plus, many of the makers that we visit love to practice their English with you.
Très bien, Rhea. Très bien.
That's perfect, Perry. You got it.
Merci.
This cider tour is scheduled September 18th through the 24th, and we'll be meeting with 8 makers throughout the week, and we'll also be having dinner with 2 of them, providing an opportunity for everyone to get to know each other, to raise a glass, and to feast on both the sights, the sound, the terroir, in your glass with some of the world's best and finest cider makers.
Hooray!
We'll be visiting some of the famous cideries, such as Domaine de Pont. And at Domaine de Pont, we will have a very special tour with the master himself, my friend Etienne de Pont. And we'll also be visiting another local cidery, Domaine Marois. And that is led by Anthony Marois. And I'll tell you, if you have not had his ciders, you are really in for a treat. But don't tell that to Eric Bordelais, who we also will be visiting and have a very special cider dinner with Monsieur Bordelais himself. Besides being in Pays d'Auge, which is one region of Normandy that is very apple-centric, we'll also be visiting the region known as Domfronté, where the Perry Pears reign.
Indeed, Ria, indeed.
That's right, Perry Pear. And there we'll visit the Musée de Poiret and also visit the Pacoret family. And of course, this time around, we're going to Bretagne or Brittany. But first, we head to Mont Saint-Michel, a World Heritage UNESCO site. So there is a lot happening on this tour, and yet you're going to have some free time to relax and enjoy the sight, sounds, and smells of France. Yes, there is a glass of cider waiting for you in France on this tour. So if you would like to come along with me and other fun-loving cider fans, send an email today to info@ciderchat.com.
We're going to France.
Ah, bien tout.
Up next, we're heading to our featured presentation, which was pre-recorded at CiderCon 2022. This is a sensory tasting, and the name of the workshop is Top of the Mitten, High Latitude Ciders from Northern Michigan. It was described as a guided sensory exploration of ciders from near or north of the 45th parallel. We'll explore the impact of the Great Lakes, the soil, orchard history, and more of these ciders from Northern Michigan. Now, on a podcast, you might be thinking, well, what am I going to get out of a sensory tasting where I don't have the ciders in hand? Well, first of all, you could probably order any of these ciders online and then follow up. But short of that, you really can actually get quite a bit out of a sensory tasting because you're hearing on how they are describing the taste of the ciders, and they're also talking about the process for making it. So I know that there are, once again, pearls of apple wisdom to be gleaned from this episode. And with Nicole Laban being the moderator, well, you know you're in for a treat. Nicole Laban is based in Vermont. She worked at Farnham Hill with Steve Wood for many years, like over 20 years, and then more recently worked at another cidery in Vermont, Silo. But nowadays, she's more of a consultant to cider makers. I've had the pleasure of judging with her on a couple of occasions now, and she's just a delight as a human, without a doubt, but her stretch of cider knowledge is really quite remarkable, and she's very approachable. So I really want to recommend her and her consulting business, which is called La Nose. You got to love it. And to check that out. So that's something to look forward to. And then we have two cider makers, because one of the cider makers at the last minute couldn't attend, and that is Brian Ulbrich from Left Foot Charlie. Sadly, he couldn't make it, but his ciders were there. And then we have Dan Young of Tandem Cider, and I believe that Dan is currently on the board of the American Cider Association. I've known Dan for a really long time because he is from Massachusetts, not too far from where I live now, and it was a local yokel, and then opened up a brewery called The People's Pint, which is still around in Greenfield, Massachusetts. And I actually used to bartend there for about a year. So fun stuff with Dan, and it's really cool to see him with the cidery now that he and his wife Nikki run. And then there's Deanne Stepanski of Presque Isle Farm. And this is a new cidery that I think they just started rolling out cider about 2 years ago. And they're based in Posen, Michigan, so also at the Top of the Mitten in Michigan, but on the eastern side of the Michigan, versus Left Foot Charlie and Tandem Cider are on the west side of the Mitten. So same kind of terroir, but it'll be interesting for you to hear on how they're sourcing their fruit here. And I was really wowed by what Dion's doing. I haven't had any of their ciders there, he and his wife Molly make, and their farmer. So you're going to hear a little bit of that story. And he was kind enough to meet up with me later and give me two bottles of their cider, one being the Kingston Black, and that's a single varietal cider, and a Golden Russet cider, which it was also a single varietal cider. So that was just the Kingston Black in one bottle and the Golden Russet in another. So I'm really curious about the Golden Russet. And yeah, I fell in love with one of his ciders, and I kept on pouring more in my glass and walked out with a glass from that workshop because I didn't want to let it go. And at the end of this episode, I'll let you know which one really wowed me. So without further delay, let's head next to this seminar all about the cideries at Top of the Mitten. And we'll begin by hearing from Nicole Laban. And that means that this is a very good time for you to grab a glass and join this chat.
So first, I wanted to know about you guys. Are any of you here from Michigan? Okay, yay. All right. But you're sort of proving my hypothesis, which is that probably a lot of the people that are here haven't had the opportunity to have a lot of Michigan ciders. And the good news is that Michelle told me that this was a short amount of time, and so we had to hurry up, which means that we're not going to talk very much, and you guys get to drink. So, I introduce to you Dion Stepanski from Presque Isle Cidery, and Dan Young from Tandem Ciders, and I will let them introduce themselves, and then we'll start drinking.
Yeah, my name is Dan Young from Tandem Ciders. My wife, Nikki Rothwell, and I opened Tandem Ciders in 2008. I'm a transplant to Michigan. My wife grew up there. And I came from a brewing background with a little bit of a love for cider. And my wife and I, Nikki and I, took a bike ride through southern England the year before we moved to Michigan. And we ended up, I was looking for breweries, and we ended up in Ciderland. And when we ended up moving to Michigan, there's so much fruit up there. And just for a description, you know, everybody says the Mitten, you know, where's the whole Mitten thing come from? But, you know, there's two parts of Michigan, and they kind of look like hands. And we're at the top of this Mitten. So we're in the lower peninsula, and we're up in the northern part. And the fruit-growing region is all along that western edge of Michigan, kind of moderated by the lake. But we can go more into that later. That's my story.
Yeah. So my name is Dion Stepanski, and I own Presque Isle Farm Cider with my wife, Molly. We basically moved home to an old family farm in Alpena area. So it's outside of Alpena, but it's the other side of the state from where Dan is. So we're not actually in the fruit-growing side of the state. We moved back from living out west for many years, took over this old family farm that wasn't a vegetable farm at the time. It was kind of just an old homestead at that point. But we started an organic vegetable farm first and foremost. So we're just in our second year of pressing. We're still buying in most of our apples, have planted an orchard, but we're kind of first and foremost an organic vegetable farm. We grow in lots of greenhouses. Our focus is lettuce. We're lettuce farmers. So we're new to apples. You know, growing apples is definitely different than growing lettuce. So all of our fruit is purchased right now from the western side of the state, right around Dan's farm, actually, or Dan's cidery. And then this year we'll get into difficulties of cider fruit. But this year we couldn't get any fruit from the farmer we got it from last year. And so we did source some, like most of our fruit this year is from Grand Rapids area. So that's like more commercial, huge commercial apple area. So fortunately for this panel, all the apples that I have in this cider is from the tip of the mitt.
Okay. And then I'm just going to, because Brian Ulrich is not here, I will just read, he sent me some stuff, so I'm going to read his spiels. Leftfoot Charlie is a small winery and cidery in Traverse City, which, as I understand, is like top, right?
Not quite on the very top. We're in this like little nook here, okay. Right by the pinky.
They started in 2004, focusing on white wines. They began producing hard cider in 2008. Currently, they make about 25,000 gallons of cider, all from apples grown on specific farms in their area. And they work directly with 5 farms, and they use a belt press. So, let's drink.
Yeah.
Okay, the first one, Dan is going to talk about his Ernest.
Ernest is the... one of our first ciders that we made with not completely all, but a lot of true cider varieties. You know, we opened up in 2008, and We really were crowing about, you know, hey, we need cider-specific fruit. We can't make cider from these, you know, regular apples. And we ended up making a lot of cider from regular apples. And, and you know, our flagship is Smackintosh, which is mostly Macintosh apples. Our other bestseller is the Green Man, which is mostly Rhode Island greening. But this is our first foray. We had some growers who really took to growing cider-specific fruit. And this is three farms kind of combined. We have a base of Rhode Island greening from the tip of Old Mission Peninsula, which is another little peninsula that sticks out into Lake Michigan. And then the other fruit is from the Watkowski farm, which is at the base of our county, and then also Kemper Schneider, who grows along the shores of Lake Leelanau. And it's pretty interesting. So this is a Tandem's take on this is, you know, we've always been like super clean fermentation. We ferment all in stainless steel. We use, you know, Red Star Cote de Blanc at a cold, you know, pretty cold temperature. And then we tend to stop the fermentation. We have a centrifuge. So we whip everything through that centrifuge and take out all the yeast. So everything's like super clean, I think, and pretty fresh. And then I think it's interesting because Dion's site of the farmhouse is, again, a bunch of apples from those one of those same farms.
Yeah.
And your take on fermentation is a little bit different.
Yeah, so the farmhouse then, if we're going to just bounce around, the farmhouse, the majority of the apples, I guess I shouldn't say majority, I guess about two-thirds of the apples are from the Watkowski farm that he was talking about, and then the rest of them are literally from like right around the corner from his cidery. So very same, similar area, but our approach to fermentation is quite a bit different. We let everything ferment wild and spontaneously first, and really only pitch yeast if there's problem. So if fermentation doesn't take off, then we'll pitch. You know, we also do focus on only stainless steel or barrels. This year, just because we were of capacity reasons, we did ferment in some totes, or one tote for the first time, but then pulled everything right out. And that's just our preference, is to stay away from the totes. But yeah. And then scale-wise, I think is important, is we're tiny. So this farmhouse was the largest cider that we released this year, and we did like 100 cases of it. So very, very small.
So just to let you guys know, in terms of a sensory and tasting perspective, I hadn't tasted any of these before I set the lineup. So I do have them going from what I was, you know, I checked in with these guys, what's your profile, to go from, you know, clean, dry, to sort of the funky. So I was fascinated to find out that the apples are from similar areas, and so that's why we wanted to bounce back and forth a little bit. These are great. I like the Earnest. It's got a nice, the acidity is nice and bright in the nose, and you can still catch some of the same aromas in the nose on the farmhouse, too. Okay, so number two is the Porter's Perfection from Left Foot Charlie. And what he said about this is this, the reason we're sad that Brian Ulbrich isn't here, Rick isn't here, is that he knows a lot about the soils, and then Dan was saying that so does Nikki. So we're going to do the best that we can, and also everybody wanted to share information, so if you guys are feeling like you'd like more, again, put your emails down or get in touch with us. The soil matrix, he says, is the result of glacial tilling, which formed the Great Lakes in general, and gave this upper area a wide variety of indiscriminately placed soil types throughout the region. Just off the Antrim Shale formation, this contributes pockets of clay among the sand and loam. Limestone, granite, and ancient fossilized seabeds were broken up and mixed in by the glacier as well, resulting in loose, draining alluvial soils from epochs long gone. The orchard on both sites sits on loamy knolls overlooking
Lake Michigan.
Okay, I was like, oh, and there's like no punctuation. The trees are on dwarf rootstock, but he forgot specifically which ones. About the Porter's Perfection, Eagle Ridge Farm in Grand Traverse County is where these were grown. This farm is about 8 miles south of the Antrim Farm with a similar soil composition. particular site is predominantly sand, a little loam, and the A horizon, the higher loam, and the clay lying in bands beneath, starting at a depth of about 6 to 8 feet on average. It's planted in a slender spindle trellis design. This was part of an experiment that was planted in 2010 to see which bittersweet and bittersharp apples could thrive in northern Michigan. Most of you guys probably know that up until around that time, Michigan was mostly working with dessert fruit, so this was newer. There were 600 trees and about 15 varieties. Porter's is a consistent producer from this site with even crops since 2016. They began isolating it as a single varietal cider in 2019. It's also used in some blends like their Eagle's Ransom, which is in the Michigan draft trailer over in the hall. And he says, based on this block, I would recommend more plantings of the variety. It has tremendous blending potential. It blends very well with Ida, with varieties like Ida Red, Jonathan Winesap Empire, can add depth and body to these traditional Michigan varieties. And he says, while it's not his goal to move away entirely from the heritage of snappy, bright acidity, these tannic varieties can help expand the potential for diversity in both the orchard and the cidery. He says he's not convinced that the slender spindle system is the best way to go. Verdict is still out, but it seems to be okay for Porter's perfection. He's not sure about the long-term prospects, though, for the tree health and the vitality. And so this Porter's Perfection, he says the sugar at harvest was 16 bricks. They fermented it with Fresco yeast from Renaissance. And on this one, the final pH is 3.4, and it's 7.9%. And this was bottle conditioned. Cheers.
So just a comment about Porter's Perfection for us. We haven't ever used the apple, but from a growing perspective, it's the tree that we've actually planted the most of. So we just started our first plantings about 4 years ago, and in that planting, we just planted a bunch of different varieties, and the Porter's Perfection just like took off. So in contrast, like Kingston is just doing horrible. They're still just like whips that like won't grow. And Porter's Perfection are the most beautiful, biggest trees. So we're actually really excited about the potential for growing that tree, actually.
Yeah. And I am a total sucker for tannins, so I really love this. These are some pretty strong tannins, though. They're not gentle. But I think as a blending opportunity, this is pretty impressive as a single varietal.
That's good.
So what do you guys think about this? Yay, Porter's Perfection? All right. Okay, go Crabster.
Crabster. Crabster, we started making Crabster when we first opened as a blend of wild foraged apples. You know, we had time back then to like drive around and pick apples.
What?
and now it seems ridiculous. But now we've moved into, you know, domestic crabs that are used as pollinizers, and also in this particular one, there's some cider-specific fruit that came from the Verschneider farm as well. So it's about half greenings. We use greenings a lot. And then the kind of rosy color comes from a crab apple. We used to pick Macintosh from a block of apples, and they had as pollinizers these red-fleshed crab apples that no one knew what they were. The growers were like, I don't know, we put that orchard in the 70s, and they just didn't remember. So they tore that orchard up, and right before they did, the guy that was actually doing the tearing up, he didn't tear out any of the pollinizers. He left them there. And our production guys, Rich and his brother Dave, we went there with a truck and actually yanked trees out of the ground with a truck and replanted them. And since then, we've grafted the apples and we've kind of saved it. We don't know what the variety is, but it has an awesome bit of a reddish color. And that's the story of the Crabster. And again, clean fermentation. And I'm always surprised just by how kind of like a little bit of a snappy apple flavor it still has. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, you know, 0.5% residual sugar, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's got a nice roundness to it. Ooh. Acid hangs on in this one. You can still feel it.
Is this fat sweetened at all?
No. We stopped the fermentation with the centrifuge. And this one pretty much, we let this one go all the way to completion. It's still about Like, you know, 0.5 residual sugar in there. They just wouldn't finish fermenting. But we did centrifuge this one as well.
All right. I'll take a look at number 4, which is Antrim County, again from Leftwood Charlie. This one is Antrim County Hard Cider. It's 50% Rhode Island Greening and 50% Jonathan. This is from Bowles Farm in Antrim County. It's about 130 acres of rolling hills with a creek and woods, and about 80 acres of cherries and apples. And these trees they planted in the late 80s. This juice, he said, had been frozen because of spatial necessities, and they fully thawed it to 11.5 Brix, fermented it with the Brio yeast from Renaissance at 58 degrees Fahrenheit on average, he says. It at around 4 Brix on the hydrometer, they chilled the tank to 40 degrees to halt the fermentation. So this one does have about a 3% residual sugar. pH on this one is 3.36, 5% alcohol. This one has been sterile filtered and slightly carbonated, which you can definitely see. And they say they make about 2,000 gallons per year of this, and this one retails at about $4 a gallon. So that's... Sorry, $4 a bottle. I'm sorry. Never mind. Look, I already had three. $8 a bottle. Okay, $8 a bottle. Sorry. All right. Now I'm going to drink some more.
And the 50% greenings that are in the is in Crabster that came from the same farm as the Antrim County that Ron Bowles has a big block of greenings. That's the thing, you know, like we're looking for cider-specific apples, and I said we spent, we based one of our ciders on these Rhode Island greenings, and now guys are trying to figure out if they should even keep them in the ground. It's not worth it sometimes for them to keep them planted. So now it's our thing. It's like, oh, well, no, it is. Like, we're willing to pay you a decent price, and Ron's been really great to work with. He's an old guy, and he's a great grower for sure. And yeah, Brian gets a bunch of apples from him, and we've been really tapping to him as well. And he had no fruit this year. He had the same thing. Yeah, we had a frost, frosted out in May. Yeah.
Tell us about Farmhouse.
We talked a little bit about it, but I guess I didn't get into the apple varieties. So they are from that same farm, and then there's actually some wild apples from Northeast Michigan as well. So we're still collecting some wild, literally seedling wild orchards. But this is a 46% Kingston Black, 20% Northern Spy, 10% Balmer's Norman, about 8 or 10% Brown Snout, some Eider Reds, and then a small amount of Romes, and then wild apples. So the wild apples are where the acidity's coming from. Just again, scale perspective, they produce 2,000 gallons of the Antrim. So last year we produced 2,000 gallons total. And we doubled our volume this year, but I mean, still totally small, tiny scale. And that's the plan, is to kind of stay that way. So we do focus, you know, our farmhouse is still like heavy, heavy on bittersweet and bitter sharps. Trying to just, you know, fit that little niche in the market of staying really focused in a, on a very cider specific apples mostly. We don't put anything else in. Ferment everything dry at this point too.
Are you guys in general in the room, are a lot of you familiar with bittersweet and bitter sharp apples? Raise your hands if that seems like a... Okay, so you guys know that a lot of the aroma profiles that are coming out of here and some of the flavor stuff is not because of the wild ferment, but a lot of it, like a lot of those nice like leathery, yeah, dried leaves and all that. That's a lot from the bittersweet apples that he's got in there.
The acidity that is coming through, it seems to be growing as the bottle ages, and I think it is coming from that the wild apples that are coming through there. Just because in our trials we've done some just straight wild fruit, and we are really excited about those apples, and have grafted several of those wild crabs, and are trying to, you know, like you said, figure out what trees are going to do really well. So a wild tree that's thriving might be a good option to cultivate that into a cider apple for our area. So I kind of like seeking out the acid from these wild crabs, especially. They're excellent source of acidity that yes. always seems to just like sing through and you don't need very much of it.
A question came in here for Dion asking if the Presque Isle Farm ciders all go through a process known as malolactic fermentation, or what is also called MLF for short. And malolactic fermentation is a process where malic acids are converted to lactic acids. And people do this for a variety of reasons. I think primarily I see it as a matter of taste. Folks who don't really want those really sour flavors of cider, and sometimes you want to, depending on the style you're making, want to soften that, and that's the process of going to a lactic acid, which is much smoother and sometimes can be a little like buttery in the finish profile. But, you know, again, it's a matter of taste. So let's hear what he has to say about that.
Yeah, most of the time, unless for some reason we really like something, we'll try to stop it. It's the nature of everything being in barrels. We let it happen.
Next question came in from the audience about growing apples in northern Michigan, which can get very cold, and how the cold climate there can play into what the person called sugar assimilation in the apples. So they're talking about how much sugar do you get in the apples versus like a dry farmed area such as like the Watsonville, California area, which is really dry farming of apples. And how does that affect the sugar content in the apples, which then will really majorly impact the profile of the finished cider? And Dan Young replies to that question.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's definitely years where we just don't have the bricks, solid bricks. And it's just, the season's relatively short where we were from. We have excellent summers, but they end pretty fast. So there are varieties that won't ripen up by us. I know like a Gold Rush is a big apple that people really like, but we just can't grow it near us. Wine Saps, we can't grow at all. But I think that speaking to that acidity, that is a Michigan cider quality. Is that brightness, sharp acidity. I think it comes from the dessert fruit that we use for sure, as a lot of us as a base. When we first started, we used a lot of crab apples, but in our some Macintosh and Green Man, I mean that Macintosh has plenty of acidity early in the season for sure. Very rarely do we have problems with acidity with our ciders.
Dion had mentioned that the acidity as it aged became more prominent in his ciders. And the question asked from the audience was, what did it taste like initially?
So I don't think the acidity levels are increasing. I'm just noticing that it's coming through a little bit more. And the character that was coming out earlier was all the bittersweet character of that Kingston, which we'll get to the next one, was really intense. These bittersweet candy, leathery, tobacco-y, sometimes smoky character was almost a rounder profile. Now it's kind of refining, and I'm noticing, I taste the thing all the time and have, and very close to the cider, but I'm noticing that acidity is peeking through, and I'm recognizing it in comparison to some of our trial stuff that was non-commercial cider that was just all wild apples. I'm noticing a similarity of that specific type of acid that seems to be kind of peeking through. This cider's from last year's pressing. So, I mean, it's a little over a year, and maybe we're finding that with that blend, the peak time was 10 to 13 months or something, but we'll see.
Your ciders are aged in barrel. What kind of barrels do you use?
We try to, on all of our labels, we're pretty transparent, and so there's French oak barrels in this cider, but they'd be neutral wine barrels. If it's a bourbon or an oak barrel that's going to be imparting something heavy, we'll label that as well. But this was a neutral wine barrel.
And Dan, how about you?
We typically use American oak. We send it through a couple of stages of fermentation before we start aging in barrels, for sure. And just to kind of clean it out, that really sharp tannic oakiness is gone. Mm-hmm.
And so Brian didn't write it in his notes. Do you guys know about his stuff?
Not sure. He is a big user of barrels, some gigantic oak barrels that I can't remember the name of. I mean, like big. He has some really big, you know, those...
Fooders?
Fooders, maybe they're called.
Yeah. I mean, so for me, I'm not getting anything, like none of these taste like newer oak to me.
Out of curiosity, I know in the winemaking world, American oak is not necessarily so prized because it can give off some of those like tropical flavors to the wine.
For sure.
Do you find that with your ciders?
Yeah, you can definitely catch some of that. We use a lot of oak. We make a pommeau that we use that American oak for, and I'm okay with those flavors coming through with that. You know, I think we're trying to make an American product, so that's why we went for the American oak. And there was a winemaker in Michigan that really sold me on those barrels. They're made from oak, usually aged like 36 months from Missouri. But he was a big, he really pushed those as a winemaker. So I said, well, if he's using them, I'm okay with that. And I think that's where we started using those oak barrels from.
How long are you aging in barrels?
For the pommeau, we try to, we're up to about 3.5 years now. We're trying to get to like 5 years before we sell it, but it's hard to do that.
And you're talking about mostly new American oak for that?
Yes, yep, yep.
Or all new American oak?
All new American oak. We've dabbled with certainly like bourbon. There's a bunch of distilleries up in our neighborhood. And so we've dabbled with, aging cider in different barrels for sure. But those have been like one-off things we've done in our tasting room. But yeah, rum barrels, what's it, like mammoth? Excuse me? We usually get like a medium toast on those. Because we played around for a few years on different, toasts on those barrels. But I think in the end, we just like, the medium toast. And again, we do a couple of rounds of ferments. Those ciders we can, sell in our tasting room. It's kind of one-off, super oaky things. But before we age the pommeau in those barrels.
Barrel aging ciders is always a hot topic as more and more cider makers are slowly moving towards that trend. And it takes a lot of practice to learn how to barrel age ciders, for sure. So Dion is being asked here, what is the length of time that Presque Isle Farm barrel ages their ciders?
So we'll ferment in all the barrels, and then it basically stays in the barrel until it's bottled. So, we start bottling. There's some stuff that's great right now, so we're actually maybe even next week going to pull a few things out that taste really good and they're ready to go. But we actually don't rack off the lees in any of our barrels either. We continue to, we use bottonnage and mix everything back in. Tried to be a little bit more on top of things and do things more commercially this year, and like rack some of our tanks, our stainless tanks, like right away when I'm supposed to, and ended up with problems in the ciders that I'm like racking. So I don't know. I think that I'm leaving stuff on lees is a mixed bag. It's worked really well for us as long as you keep putting it back into solution for us. But it's kind of frustrating when you try to do things and be a little bit more proactive and then cause problems because of it.
All right, use that to segue into the Kingston Black.
So Kingston Black, this is a blend of two different barrels and then one stainless tank. In the stainless tank, we did pitch yeast in. The barrels were, again, neutral French oak barrels. And the barrels were both wild fermented. We don't filter anything. In July, I bottled some up off of just to take and drink, but it actually wasn't finished in July. So sitting in our cellar at 50 degrees, it kind of continued on, and we just really had to keep waiting and waiting. So we haven't really sold much of this yet because we didn't bottle it that long ago. It took almost a year to finish, but it was still moving, so we just waited and waited. We want to just sulfite a little bit right at bottling, but we do actually use we'll go into a bright tank, so we're not bottle conditioning. So that's a little bit different. I just like, since we're going wild with so much stuff and leaving so much up in the air that at bottling, I kind of like the control of still really light carbonation too. I don't think the bitter sweets and bitter sharps, they can get really overpowered if the carbonation's too high, and that can happen pretty easily with bottle conditioned stuff. So I like the mellow carbonation. But this is beautiful. This is probably my favorite cider of ours right now. It just turned out splendidly.
Yeah.
I like the smokiness. That's my favorite type of cider. Is those phenolics and yeah.
I like this because one of the things that I like out of Kingston Black is sometimes it throws sort of this like candied or caramel orange kind of flavor, and this is one of the few ones that I've had it in. So we were talking about a little bit of regional diversity in some of the single varietals, and it's something I haven't picked up in a lot of the West Coast Kingston Blacks, and not all of, you know, sort of the Northeast ones. You know, you talked a little bit about how Michigan's growing conditions influence the apples that you get there and, you know, some of your cider making choices. To me, this represents a really different idea of what I had been tasting in Michigan like 10 or 15 years ago. And so I'm just wondering, do you guys still feel like you were talking about sort of that, you know, snappy, acid, bright, clean Michigan stuff? Do you guys feel like Michigan has a sort of regional distinction? And do you feel like you're top of the mitten? I mean, part of the reason everybody's interested in that latitude, right, is because it's where you grow great wines and in France. And so Do you guys feel like your top versus the rest of the mitten is different? And how would you, you know, is there a regional thing, or do you think there's enough shifting and change now going on that that's less viable or less? It seems to me you've got more variability than you used to, which I think is fantastic.
I think certainly up the top of the mitten by us in the past 10 years has been a big explosion. So we have kind of lost that like Michigan flavor of you know, winemaker influenced, you know, clean, high acid, fruity cider. There's just different people entering the market. I mean, you know, Deanna has started and taking a whole different approach than that. I know there's you know, a dozen cideries up by us now in our region that are all kind of taking a different take on it, and it's. Yes, so I think there's a lot more diversification of flavor and exploration and just, you know, people's takes on how they're going to make cider. And it's exciting because we have a whole new, you know, we have a bunch of apples that are coming available to us that, you know, we just haven't had for ever, you know, so now it's like we get to experiment with these. It's exciting. It's an exciting time. So I would definitely make a pitch just as like a tourist pitch. If you're ever in Michigan, certainly Glint Cap is worth checking out. The Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition, awesome place to meet and hang out with fellow cider aficionados. They have a great training program for cider judging and stewarding. And then when you're in that neighborhood, there's it's a just quick hop, skip, and a jump to come up and see us up north.
So can everybody give a thanks to our volunteers and to the panel?
This pre-recorded workshop from CiderCon 2022 once again was titled Top of the Mitten. Again, the moderator was Nicole Bond, and you heard from Dan Stepanski of Presque Isle Farm, Dan Young of Tandem Ciders, and also ciders tasted from Left Foot Charlie, all Michigan-based cideries. And as Dan said, there's a lot going on there. In fact, Cider Chat has a number of episodes from Michigan cideries, and most recently had a recording with Patrick McCauley, all on cider mills down in the Ann Arbor region of Michigan, and there's amazing history. So I will be putting links in the show notes for this here episode 314, so you could check out some of those Michigan cideries that are still in operation. And having been to the area known as the Ridge during Apple Blossom, I'll tell you, it was just absolutely breathtaking. So I hope soon you might be headed to Michigan to check out their ciders. And to follow up on my earlier statement on what cider I walked out of that workshop with and actually wanted to kind of grab as many bottles as I could, but they're already all poured. Well, that was the farmhouse cider from Presque Isle Farm. It was just smooth as, well, a baby's behind. What can I say? I do have a tendency to go for ciders that go through malolactic fermentation. So that's just my preference. But that doesn't mean it's the only way to roll. And of course, Left Foot Charlie and Tandem Cider had excellent ciders too. But yeah, that farmhouse cider just was the cat's meow. Coming up in June, don't forget, I'll be recording an episode with a tech from Fermentis all on yeast. And in this here episode, you heard from two makers using two different types of yeast. For Tandem Cider, they're using a yeast that I typically think of as a wine yeast, and that is Cote de Blanc. Presque Isle Farm is doing primarily natural fermentation, so they're using the wild ambient yeast. So there's a lot of different directions you could go, and if you are puzzled or you have a question about that, do send those questions my way to info@ciderchat.com. This coming September 18th through the 24th, there is a Totally Cider tour headed to Normandy and Brittany. And you could see some of the makers that we will be hanging out with and having dinner with, too, to boot, which is a very intimate experience. And I'll tell you, I didn't really know if I was going to be doing any more Totally Cider tours. I mean, you know, the pandemic was tough on all of us. And in fact, things have changed. One of the makers I was hoping to go see, well, the cidery has now been sold. So that means all the product moving forward is going to be totally different, because that's how life moves. So anyone that was on a past tour to France with me, we had a moment in time to be able to taste a very magical Calvados that will never be the same. I mean, it just changes. And that is how life moves along. And that is one thing that I think we have all learned during these past 2 years, is to not put off our dreams, but to live them today, because we never know if tomorrow is going to come. And, you know, it's been a tough lesson for sure, but it has allowed me, and I hope allowed you, to continue to live each day fully and to fulfill your dreams and not put off your dreams for another day, because that day, again, may not come. Anywho, without further ado, let me just encourage you to go check out the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com, and you'll be able to see a listing of the makers from past episodes that I've had on the podcast, some of which we will be visiting on this tour. I just cannot wait to see these folks, and I know that they can't wait to see all of us heading there September 18th through the 24th. Send an email my way if you're interested in going along, and soon this tour will be released to the public. A big tip of the glass to all the fine folks who support this podcast monthly through the Cider Chat Patreon page. You too can become a patron by going to the Cider Chat Patreon page, which is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Yes! And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Like cider, we like palms, we love orchards and having fun. There is a reason,
there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
Like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There's a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet,
oh yeah.
We like cider,
ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms,
oh yes we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!